This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Doug Pollard here with another program of news and current affairs. As we've reported before, some people are going to lose out badly when Centrelink starts treating same-sex couples the same as de facto couples. That comes in on July 1. But pressure is mounting on the government to think again. We're going to speak to Corey Earlham about that. Sadness in the gay community this week as we farewell one of our regular contributors, Ian Clichaire, who died suddenly last weekend at the age of 43. Andrew Shaw will be taking a look back at Ian's life and work. Gays in sport, especially out gays, are thin on the ground, but the Challenging Homophobia in Sport initiative, CHISI for short, we've got to get them a better name than that, will be upstairs on Saturday to talk about their experiences in a public event. Yes, please come along here, the cool-in room, to Our Sporting Lives, it's going to be called. Caroline Simons from CHISI will be explaining to us. That gathering's part of Midsummer, but there are other gay festivals in Australia, such as Adelaide Feast. This year, we'll be able to get a taste of Feast here at Midsummer, as they bring four of their best shows across the country. We'll be talking to Dan Clark, Artistic Director of the festival. And, of course, the ever-fragrant Kay Sara will look beneath her bonnet and discover, gasp, shock, horror, a few wrinkles, as she examines ageing disgracefully. And also in the studio night, it's a gay journo evening here tonight with is Andrew Shaw from MCV and Andy Noonan from Southern Star. Now, the row over the impact of the recognition of same-sex relationships, as I said earlier, does continue to rumble on, with advocates now hoping that the government's pensions review might provide some answers. I'm hoping we've got Corey Earlham on the line to bring us up to date on what's happening here. Good evening, Corey.
Good evening, guys. How are you? And Andy.
Thank you.
on honorary guy.
I don't know about that.
Well, we've got the full spectrum in here, if you take Kay into account.
That's right. Hello, Corey.
Now, first off, before we start, Corey, on all this, a lot of people have been asking, what's the timetable for all these different equality changes that are coming in? Have you managed to kind of get a timeline out of the government yet for all this?
Look, the times are there in the legislation, but what we've asked the Attorney General's Department to do, and they've agreed to do, is to actually just create a simple one or two pager that says, on this date, these things come into effect. And supporting that already on their website is what those things are and what it means. We haven't yet seen that document, but what I can tell you off the top of my head is that there's sort of three categories of things. There was Medicare that came in on the 1st of January, and that includes things like the family tax benefit and the safety net for Medicare. There were a few miscellaneous things that came in when the bill passed at the end of December, so there's things like superannuation and those associated changes. Family court and access to the family court rather than using the state Supreme Court. We've just got to confirm that date, but it's somewhere around the middle of April, middle of March, beginning of April. And then the bulk of all these reforms for things like age pension, veteran affairs, Centrelink payments, social security payments, the aged care homes, that all comes into effect on 1 July this year.
Okay. So now a lot of people have contacted me to say, you know, this business about equality coming in is going to be unfair to a lot of people, but a lot of other people have also said, tough, equality for all is more important than the losses have been suffered by a few. Is there any way, possibly, that the government might look at ameliorating the damage that these changes can make?
Look, it's a complicated process. I don't think anybody in the government going to say that we're going to remove these changes and continue to discriminate against same-sex couples. And I don't think that there's a majority in the community who would want them to.
No, but I think the general feeling in the community is that this is being rushed in rather too fast. And perhaps people who are already on benefits should be left as they are and be able to choose whether to opt in or not.
Yeah, and that's where I was heading with it, Doug, but I just wanted to preface that by making sure everybody's clear on the fact that we're not asking for these changes not to come in.
No, no.
What has happened, though, every time that a Social Security payment change has occurred, is the government generally does what's called grandfathering, which says those people who are on the current system, who are on the current payment, can stay on it for a period of time until they get rolled over. And, you know, somewhere around the 5 years maybe is an appropriate time. So if you look at the women's age pension, which used to be 60 and now is 65, all new people going onto it go into it at the level of 65. All those that were on it or should have expected they would stay on 60 between that bracket, each year there was a grandfathering clause that said, well, if you're 61 1 year afterwards, you can stay on it, or 62, and they allowed people to adjust to it. That's what we're asking them to do here. Give enough time for people who expected to receive a certain amount of income to adjust to what the new amount will be without just saying, hey, you've got 6 months to figure out where you're going to find possibly up to $2,400 a month for you to be able to keep your mortgage and not have to sell your home.
Okay. Andrew Shaw, you want to come in on this one?
Yes. Hi, Corey. I think it sort of came home when this week I received a letter, and possibly you did too, Andy, from Mr. Tovey.
And Wagner?
Or I beg your pardon? No.
Tovey?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes. And he's performing at Midsummer, and he made the point that for most of his life, he's 75 years old, for most of his life there was inequality, for most of his life he was illegal, especially as an Aboriginal man, and he was, if you like, doubly discriminated against. And I think that someone in his situation and many elderly people like him must think that it's, in a sense, that they're going to, that they deserve something, I suppose, that they deserve a break from the government. Do you think that that is the case, that maybe younger people, okay, they can adapt, but older people might not be able to?
For those of your listeners who don't know, I'm under 30, okay? So I'm one of those younger people, and I'm appalled at the thought that those people who have been discriminated against for the longest period of time throughout their life, those people who are older in our community, are actually going to bear the worst brunt of these changes, and they're going to continue to be discriminated against. I don't think that it's fair or it's just for the government to have two standards when they make general Social Security reform changes, they do grandfathering. When they make a same-sex reform change, they haven't done grandfathering. And they've said, well, you know, equal means equal, and if we allow this to happen, then we would be discriminating against heterosexuals if we continue to. Well, that's not entirely true. If you made a blanket rule and said everybody, you don't have to declare your relationship if you're gay, that would be discrimination. If you followed the precedence that's been sent with every other Social Security reform and said for those that are currently on it, they should be grandfathered, and we have empathy and we understand that it's hard for people who are of an age that they can't go back into the workforce, that they can't afford to live on a new adjustment with less income. I think that's appropriate, I think that's fair, and that's what we'll be talking about how to do.
Okay,
now,
can I...
Is the government going to do it? There's no guarantee that they will.
Okay.
And that's why we're talking to them things about, well, maybe you need to provide an independent advocate to talk to them about it. We're not ruling out anything with the government. We want to talk to them about what they're willing to do. We want to present the arguments to them, and they need to be constructed. And it's a good thing that people like Mr. Tovey are standing up and getting angry, if you like, and saying, hey, hang on, this is wrong. We said it during the Senate inquiries. We said it during the Senate debate. We've said it since it happened. It's not the activists that have been saying, oh, it doesn't matter. So just want to make that point.
Okay. Andy Noonan.
Corey, why has it been overlooked then? What are the reasons as far as you're concerned? Was it something that was, I mean, you mentioned that it was brought up during the Senate inquiries, but why did it sort of get pushed to the side?
Look, Andy, there's a raft of speculation that I could go into, but it would be just that speculation. What I can say to you is the Senate report spoke about this issue. They recommended that the government looks at administrative and regulatory ways to lessen the impact on these vulnerable demographics, so people who are on disability support pensions, people who are older, they're labelling as a vulnerable demographic. They didn't, however, go that one step further and recommend a legislative change. They didn't recommend to put into law a grandfathering, and that's what they usually do. I can't speak for the senators as to why they didn't recommend it. I can say that the Greens suggested it should happen, but it didn't happen for various reasons. We need to talk to them and come back and discuss how, when, where, why.
Okay. Got a question here from a listener. It says, I've been on the pension since 2000 and I have a boyfriend, but we don't live together. What happens to us?
Well, it depends on a couple, on his personal situation, but I'll make some assumptions. If he doesn't live together, they're not in a registered relationship, then because they don't live together, they won't be seen as a de facto partner, because one of the criteria to be a de facto partner is that you're living together.
So okay, but if they
just won't affect them.
But if they register their relationship, then they would be seen as de facto partners.
Yeah, because registering your relationship is showing that you've got a committed relationship, like a de facto partnership.
So the message there is don't go and register your relationship.
No, absolutely not. The message there is that if your relationship is one that is not interdependent, that you don't have that level of commitment or choose to have that level of commitment, that doesn't mean that you don't love each other just as much as the next guy, but if you don't have that level of commitment that you want to say to the world, we are a loving couple who look after each other and have financial interdependency, where I'll support you and you support me, and we want to register that fact to say that we're just like every other de facto relationship without having to prove our de facto relationship, or in Victoria it's called domestic partner,
Yeah. Then
obviously that person, that couple, wouldn't be looking to register. I think registration's a wonderful thing for those people who choose to do it.
Okay, I had another question actually came into me earlier today before I came into the show. Someone else, in fact, they're acquaintances of mine, they live together, they have property in common, but they otherwise lead what he called very separate lives. They have separate bank accounts, and otherwise they keep their finances separate. How will this affect them?
Yeah, maybe this is a good time for me to explain. For Centrelink, they have these 5 points, and I haven't got them all here in front of me, unfortunately. And those 5 points are things like the existence or the non-existence of a sexual relationship, the public perception of that relationship. So does the friends and family see them as a couple?
Mm-hmm.
And things like financial set arrangements. So if they've got joint property together, and then there's an argument that Centrelink may say, well, you're sort of like a de facto relationship because you share property, but they might have separate bank accounts and their friends might say that they're just two good friends, and there's no sexual relationship between them. That's a determination for Centrelink to make.
So a bit of a minefield, in fact.
Well yeah, and people just need to understand a couple of things, which is, one, Centrelink's asking you to volunteer the relationship that you have. So you need to say, I am in a relationship. If you don't say that you're in a relationship and there's an indicator brought to Centrelink's attention that you are, so for example, it could be that you claimed your partner as a tax benefit, or you had the family safety net together.
Yeah, there go my chances.
Yep. or something like that, then that's indicating to the government, not to Centrelink, but to another agency, that you see your relationship like that. They would to be made aware of that, Centrelink would, and they would investigate, well, why haven't you told us about your partner? There is also a possibility that somebody might call up Centrelink and say,
of course, the Dobbin,
down the road, she lives with that lesbian Joe. And then Auntie Fanny has a Centrelink investigation, and it's not as scary as it sounds. Centrelink contacts you and they talk to you about it.
Okay.
Now, there's some mist to dispel there that we can talk about another day.
Okay.
And everybody needs to understand there's probably two parts to this. There's what is Centrelink policy, and what is Centrelink reality.
Okay, and Andy, you wanted to come in here.
I just wanted to ask whether you know, Corey, of any education sort of campaigns, I guess, that Centrelink or the government intend to do, because it sounds very complex, and for the average punter, you know, it sounds very convoluted. So do you know of anything that's they've got in the pipeline?
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you that Centrelink will be at Carnival on Sunday. They'll be at the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby stand, which I think is F5, and they'll have two people there to be able to hand out some information and to be able to answer questions that people have.
Yeah, I can also tell you they've booked a stall at Chill Out.
There we are. They'll be around, they'll be talking. Separate to that, my understanding, I sit on the customer reference group for same-sex reforms with Centrelink and a raft of other government agencies. My understanding is that the campaign, advertising, ads, communication of that sort will start in March, at the same time when they'll allow people to pre-register their relationship, remembering that those changes don't come into effect till 1 July.
Yeah, okay. Look, we're going to have to leave it there for the moment, Corey, because we've got a whole show to do, and we could do a whole show on this, and in fact we will be doing a whole show on this in the near future. In fact, Joy's going to run a whole special on this whole issue in the not-too-distant future. But in the meantime, thanks for keeping us abreast of things.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, Andrew, that was... I could see you kind of, you know, lurching to the microphone there. What were you going to bring up?
I remember way, way back in the 80s, there was a straight couple, friends of mine, and every 3 months they used to have someone come round from Centrelink or whatever it was called in Brisbane at that time, and they used to get a curtain, and they used to put the curtain up in the middle of their bedroom, and they used to have two single beds, and they used to say, no, we're just friends. And they were in a total sexual relationship and what have you. And this whole thing is kind of creepy, because I don't know to what extent the state should be able to dictate to us what our relationships are and how we live. And I know it's different with benefits, and I guess that's the whole thing, right? It's about money. They don't want to give you more money than you're entitled to.
Well, it's about equality as well. I mean, I guess being devil's advocate, we can't say we want one thing and let, you know, the straight community have another, which you know, they do badly
sure.
off as well.
But, I mean, there is an argument. I mean, someone, I think, did a study on this in the UK, because they talked about making the age pension in the UK is not means-tested, right? You get your age pension regardless of your income. Everybody gets it automatically. And they looked at making it means-tested. And they figured out it would actually cost them more to means test the pension and monitor everybody and investigate and have all these categories and, you know, measure levels and things. It would cost them far more to do that than they were losing on the odd paying out the odd person who didn't really need it.
Mm.
So there's a question as to why. I mean, Centrelink is one of the hugest bureaucracies in the country, and it isn't really necessary.
Yes, I think it's penny pinching, and
it is,
I think it's
counterproductive.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think you either have a civilized society where you provide level of benefit to the aged and people that are disabled or are unemployed, or you don't. Simple as that. And we choose to have it, but we don't want to have it without condition, and that strikes me as being just a little bit too po-faced.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report with Doug Pollard.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
Informing, entertaining and provoking, this is The Rainbow Report.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you with the able assistance of Kay Sarah, Andy Noonan and Andrew Shaw. Midsummer is upon us, pretty much. The carnival coming up at the weekend with a vast range of events, not just parties and shows like Kay's romp through the 60s. And I don't mean through the 60-year-olds, although with Kay, who knows? Well, there you go, dear. A gratuitous plug
Thank
for
you,
your
Dan.
Show.
Thank you.
But the festival offers opportunities to come together and discuss issues of importance too. Chissy, the challenging Homophobia in Sport initiative, we have got to get them a better name than that, has a couple of out gay Olympic athletes coming along to talk about their experiences in high level sport. And Caroline Simons, senior lecturer at the School of Sport and Exercise Science of Victoria University, is on the line to tell us all about it. Good evening, Caroline.
Hi, Doug.
So, who have you got coming along?
Well, we have Peter van Miltenburg, who was as fast as Matt Shervington in his time. He's not as well known, but he was represented...
Not as locally prominent, as you might say.
No. He represented Australia in the 1984 Los Angeles Olympics, and he was the Australian champion in the 100 and 200 metre sprint. He actually made the semi-finals against Carl Lewis.
Okay.
He also coaches athletics, surf lifesaving, and he's coached AFL football, so he's had a variety of experiences in sport.
At a pretty high level, too.
Mm.
And you've also got...
Michelle Ferris. Who's the silver medalist at the Atlanta Olympics in cycling, and she's a Gay Games ambassador as well. So we should have a really interesting night with, or afternoon, sorry, with those Olympians talking about their experiences at the elite level. But we're also really keen to open up the conversation to the audience and find out what their experiences are in the sporting arena. Because one of the main aims of the forum is to actually collect stories and share stories.
Now, this is part of this research project you've got going, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it'll help us with the research and also with any sort of promotion of what we're doing. It'll certainly help us with our understanding. But the research that we've got going is we've actually, over the past 2 months, secured funding for the first ever research into the LGBT Victorian sport experience. And we've got $10,000 from VicHealth, $10,000 from Victoria University, and $5,000 for the OutGames Legacy Fund. And what we'll be doing is we'll be constructing an online survey on the barriers and facilitators, if you like, of the sport for LGBT participants, and finding out what's happening in the sports world. So there'll be tick-a-box questions there, but there'll also be opportunities to tell stories in that survey. And that should be online by the end of Feb.
Okay. Andrew Shaw.
Yes, it's interesting talking about homophobia in sport. In the, not the current, but the last issue of MCV, we had an AFL footballer on there, Andrew Walker from Carlton. He wasn't the first choice for the spot. The first choice was a younger guy, maybe Hislop was his name, from Essendon, I think. Very attractive, 19 or 20-year-old, and when we contacted his management and told them the good news that they were going to be on the MCV cover, they had kittens, and we were asked not to put him on there because he was so young.
Oh.
And because it might not look... It might give the wrong impression to someone starting out in their career. And we were asked to look for someone who had a girlfriend and had kids, and we found someone, Andrew Walker, who I think in actual fact is a much better looking guy anyway.
That's one way to get the other guy to come on board for the next issue.
That is, but I think it's probably a great step forward anyway that we got anyone from the AFL to appear in any kind of dress on the front of a gay paper. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, did you have any problems with anyone else? Did they
No, I think it was completely this guy's youth and the fact that it was a really, really silly, provocative pose he was in. It was totally sexual.
They wanted something staunchly masculine.
Yeah, I don't know how they got him in. Yeah, how did they get him in that position? I don't know.
Well, Caroline...
Yes.
This kind of perception, I suppose there must be a lot of footballers, whether straight or gay, who are kind of nervous about being associated with gay things, as I say, whether they're gay or not. I mean, that's something we need to overcome, isn't
it? Oh, definitely. But I did notice that, I think it was Carlton, one of the clubs was going to a gay nightclub last year as a way of sort of winding down.
Well, I guess maybe they felt safer there, perhaps, than with a lot of predatory females around them.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. They'd be in bigger trouble.
Well, I don't think they want to promote that, though, that they're, out and about.
I'm sorry, just being provocative there, part of the brief on this show.
Yeah.
So, this event you've got, you're having the two Olympians to talk, but you're also hoping for an audience of people to come along and engage in conversation and perhaps tell their own stories of their experiences in sport.
We've got Kenton facilitating, Kenton Miller, and he's very engaging, and we'll get everybody involved, and we'll actually be writing up some stories, we hope, as well.
Good.
So now, we really do encourage people to come. It's 2 o'clock on Saturday, 17th of January. This Saturday.
This is this Saturday, yeah, and it's here upstairs at Joy, isn't it, on the
that's
top floor,
right.
On the cooling room, as they call it.
Yeah.
So that's at 225 Burke Street. It says on my list here, coming at 2:15, yep. And it finishes about 4:15, you're hoping?
That's right. And I didn't quite finish the research project either, because we've got this online work,
sure.
But we've also got two scoping projects involved there, and one of them's to look at good practice internationally on addressing homophobia in sports. So we'll be especially looking at examples from Canada and the Netherlands and the UK, as well as looking at good practice within Australia in relation to addressing racism in sport, because there's some good programs out there that we can model and develop strategies and policies. So we'll have the
yeah.
research, and we'll also have actions, strategies to come up with.
Yeah, so there's a lot of groundwork being done, which you can adapt, I should think, for this
yeah,
kind of thing.
That's right.
Okay.
Right, rather than reinvent the wheel, we'll find the best practice out there.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for that, Caroline, and I hope you have a successful meet.
Thank you, Doug.
That was Caroline Simons there from Victoria University. The event is called Our Sporting Lives, and there is actually an event page about it on Facebook. I won't read out the great long link, but if you're into Facebook and you look for Our Sporting Lives, you've got all the details on there. Think this is going to lead anywhere, Andrew?
Well, I hope so. I mean, there was earlier this year was the whole Ken Campagnolo. Well, it's still continuing, the case there before the tribunal.
Yes, in fact, there was an article in the paper today about Ken, was there not? Both in The Age and in the Herald Sun and in The Australian. Sorry, Kay.
Yeah?
Just go, Andrew. You haven't finished.
And I think that perhaps it's brought to public awareness this issue of homophobia in sport.
I think the research might be a bit of a smoking gun, because, I mean, previously there's been a lot of research with younger people, but there's nothing being done on sport specifically in different levels. And I think that that's the thing that people have been denying. And once they have the figures in front of them, it's often much harder to sort of, you know, throw it back and say, no, there's no problem going on here. I think that that's the most important thing about the research.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's very concerning that, you know, the AFL would you know, have reservations about putting a young football player on the cover of a gay magazine. I mean, that tells me straight away that they don't think gay is good.
Well, I should say it wasn't the AFL, it was just the club, and it was his age and youth,
right.
And what have you. And I think,
yes.
I think his
okay.
relative experience perhaps in dealing with the trauma that would come from...
But that's absurd. That's
I know.
Absurd.
I don't want to
yes.
belittle... I mean,
yeah,
I understand the reasons yeah. why the choice is
yeah.
made.
Yes.
They thought he might have a bit of a problem handling the backwash from it.
Did anybody
words.
Actually
being a single,
ask him?
Being a single
was he, did you have any correspondence with him directly or not?
His management was approached on our behalf.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, I didn't actually speak to him personally.
But it does actually show that there is that kind of level of... I don't know whether you call it homophobia, but it just seems to me to be this thing that, you know, well, it's not a good thing for this footballer to be seen in this context, no matter his age, I would say. So I think it's quite weird.
Well, I think it's also yeah, I think it's also the thing that, you know, he would then probably have to be fending off questions from the press about is he or isn't
Hello.
He, and it might generate
welcome to the real world. If he's cute and built like a big shit house, then good God, you know what I mean? Hello, Melbourne.
He's a footballer in Melbourne. What does he expect? Yeah. I've just got another SMS in here. It harks back to what we were talking about earlier on about pensions and Centrelink and so on. It's actually a caller who rang the desk. David called to ask, what about those who don't want to come out or aren't out and don't want to disclose their sexuality to the likes of Centrelink? Well, it actually comes down, as Corey said, as to whether you declare your relationship in any way, shape or form. It depends on whether you register your relationship, and if you do live together, it depends on whether somebody dobbs you in, really, at the end of the day, and says, no, these two are a couple and they ought not to be getting two separate pensions. But that would give the Centrelink the right to investigate. Not too good, but, you know, it's kind of a bit like don't ask, don't tell in the military in the USA.
Yeah, very much like that.
It's really weird that all this is supposed to give us some equality is actually shoving some people back into the closet. I don't think that's what was intended, and that's what we need to get clarified. You're listening to The Rainbow Report with Doug Pollard.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is the Rainbow Report.
With Doug Pollard, with the able assistance of Andrew Shaw, Andy Noonan and Kay Sarah. Just poking my personal oar in here on the question of chill out, just to let you know, the chill out guide is now available from all outlets. It's been distributed in the last couple of days, including here at Joy, and tickets for the dance party and carnival are available at App Video and Hares and Hyenas, as well as online. Just thought I'd get that one in. Now, why else do you have a radio show? Of course, there are other gay festivals around the country besides Midsummer and Chill Out, and of those, Adelaide's Feast Festival is one of the most highly regarded. This year, Feast is bringing four shows over to Midsummer so we can get a taste of what it's all about, and Feast's artistic director, Dan Clark, joins us now on the line. Good evening, Dan.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Good. I've just made it into a house. I was out on the street, so I'm feeling good now.
You sound like you were on the run from something.
I was.
Well, not me, I hope. Now, tell us about this program that you're bringing to Midsummer.
We are bringing a feast in four courses, which is going to be at the Gasworks from the 21st of January through to the 25th. It's four shows that were created for Feast 2007, which was my first year as artistic director. And I've chosen four shows that are really, really diverse, but also and will appeal to a wide range of audience. But also there's some really kind of artists who are pushing boundaries, and I'm trying out some new things. So I think it's going to give Melbourne audiences who haven't been to Feast a real taste of some of the work that is created over here.
Well, I must say, one of the first thing that struck me is looking up at the foot program of the four, and the first one is called "I Was a Teenage Dirty Old Man."
Yeah, that's Eric Coleman.
No, that's a good title.
It is, and it was one of the pieces of the 2007 festival that really, really pushes boundaries. It's a one-man piece with a lot of music that Eric has written and performed, and I guess he talks about what it's like to be a younger guy and a teenage man and wanting to have sex at beats and having sex at beats and having sex with older men and that being okay.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, you know, that might be confronting, but it's a beautifully honest, very honest and well-written piece of theatre.
Okay, now, Kay Sarah, you want to come in on this?
Yes, Dan, I think Feast has the great privilege of having an artistic director. It's one of the few festivals in Australia, gay queer festivals in Australia, that has that. What have you tried to do with the festival in your tenure?
I've really tried to attract, I guess, within South Australia, wider audiences to the festival. I've also really tried to program and support great work and bring work from overseas to Australia. And with both of last year and 2007, the work that I've brought into Feast, I've actually been able to show in Melbourne at the Spiegel Tent because it's on at the same time, which has worked quite well. Fortunately for this year's Feast, we were able to get $100,000 worth of funding from the Australia Council for the Arts for six community arts projects.
So, that's very good going.
Which is brilliant. It's going to create some great projects of professional artists working with community members.
And Dan, could you explain to us, why is it that Adelaide seems to produce these fabulous festivals and yet, you know, it seems to be quite a bogan town in a lot of... I mean, don't mean to be insulted, but it seems to, you know, it's the city of churches, for heaven's sake.
No, I mean, and it's one of the things that we, you know, kind of asked the questions last Feast Festival, like how diverse actually is this city and why does it have such a huge and well-supported queer arts and cultural festival when there's one gay venue? we don't have the answers. I don't have the answers to that. But people really tend to get behind, I guess, the art here, and I've really tried within my time as artistic director to kind of sell the festival as an arts festival, as much as a community festival, as much as a queer arts and cultural festival. And we have made, you know, our audiences have developed and have increased. So I'm really looking for, you know, excellent work and trying to find deliver a balanced program of like more cutting edge work along with the popular work that, you know, will sell
Well, you're obviously doing a really, really good job there, Dan. Now, when is this on here in Melbourne?
Opens next Wednesday at Gasworks, and each of the shows, there's a Four Faces of Dance piece, and Libby O'Donovan's The Meredith Coxley Project is a particularly brilliant piece of work. But again, is a one-person show with music and original compositions, and Libby's a fantastic performer. And what's the other show? The Bad Father, the Collection Tour. They're absolutely out there performers and really bent. And they're all on, they're really bent, really, it's quite something that piece.
Okay.
So from the 21st to the 25th at Gasworks, and each show's on four times.
Well, we'll encourage all our listeners to go along and get a taste of your feast. Thank you, Dan, for your time very much tonight.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And keep up the good work.
Brilliant. Thanks, Doug.
That was Dan Clark there from Adelaide Feast.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is the Rainbow Report.
Now, regular listeners will know that we regularly ring round the country to find out what's happening to the queer community in other parts of Australia. One of the people we used to call was Ian Clashare, the editor of Queensland Pride. Sadly, last Friday, Ian died suddenly of a massive heart attack, prompting an outpouring of shock, sadness and appreciation for this multi-talented man. Andrew Shaw worked closely with Ian over the last couple of years. He was much more than just a newspaper editor, wasn't he, Andrew?
Yes, well, I got the call from our publisher in Sydney and last Friday afternoon, and Ian had not turned up for work that morning, which is very unlike him. He was the news stringer, if you like, for getting the stories on the website every morning early on Evolution, and for the last year when I was doing that job, online editing, I would get a call from Ian, sometimes at home, when I was still in bed, because he's up very early. Anyway, I was told that Ian hadn't turned up for work, that one of his colleagues had gone round to see how he was, that the front door had been opened, that everything had looked quite fine, except that Ian was in the toilet, trapped between the toilet and the wall of the bathroom, and that he wasn't moving, and that he was covered in insects, and he was clearly dead. And so this colleague of his ran outside and called 000, and the person told him to go back inside and attempt CPR, but he said, no, well, you know, what was the point? He was cold, he was obviously dead. But he did go back inside and tried to remove Ian from that position, but couldn't. Because he was all stiff, so ambulance came, and they don't know how long he'd been dead for, but they believe he died of a heart attack.
Yeah, I believe there's an autopsy being carried out, isn't there?
Yes, and I'm together with Richard Watts from Canvas Magazine. I'm flying up on Wednesday next week to the funeral, and there's going to be a wake afterwards. But it was a huge shock. I mean, it was just kind of unbelievable. You think, what? You know, I'd spoken to him the day before. I'd rung his number by accident and said, oh, how are you going? I'm sorry, I meant to call somebody else. And what are you up to? He said, I'm about to go out and do some cover shoots for our next issue. And he was a great guy. I mean, you know, everyone says that about dead people, right? You know, he was a great guy. But Ian really was a great guy. And it was only after he'd gone that you look back and you thought, oh, yeah, he played keyboards in all these queer bands. He was one of the founding members of the Australian Coalition for Equality. He was active as an activist in local politics up there. He was one of the first people to get up there at the registry office when two women turned up to register their relationship. He was there with his camera running halfway across town to get it. He was also a great photographer. People can still go on his website on Flickr, I should say.
Yes, yeah.
Mr. Riddles is what he was called.
Yeah.
You can see his photo stream there. And he had he was just so well-rounded, and yet I don't know if people have much experience of editors, but Andy, you'll know that we're raving egomaniacs, and you just become that way because everybody wants something off you, and everyone's being nice to you, and you've made all these every day you make these hundreds and hundreds of decisions, and eventually you just think, "Yep, I'm hot shit." He didn't. He wasn't like that. He was incredibly humble. I mean, I thought when I first started working with him, I thought, oh, he's only been working for a couple of months or something, you know, and then I found out he'd been editor for 10 years.
Yes, Andrew, I think, is there a way of honouring these people nationally? I mean, sure, inside his own backyard, there'll be, as you say, you'll go up to the funeral and there'll be the wake and everything, but, you know, this is a huge contribution from this man, and I think it would... I'm not aware of any website or any forum that honours this contribution nationally. I think it'd be a great idea to get something like that up.
I think it would be, yeah.
There is in England now, they are starting what they call an online museum.
Fabulous idea.
The Online Pride Museum, which is exactly for this kind of thing. It's for archives of gay events and things, but it's also for honouring people from our community.
Obituaries as well.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't even particularly old. I think he was in his mid-40s. 43.
Mm, 43,
yeah.
43.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's just awful to think. Mm. You know, I spent the whole weekend after that worrying, really. I mean,
How old are you?
I'm not saying. About that age. And I just remember in my bathroom having a shower on the Saturday morning, and I was thinking, I wonder if this is what it was like for Ian. And it's kind of creepy, you know. It never enters your head, usually, and then suddenly you think, oh, what if it happened now? How long would it take them to find me and all that kind of creepy gothic stuff that Ian would have loved, by the way? I mean, he was totally into the whole gothic queer thing. He was queer with a capital, you know, Q.
Capital K.
Sorry, yeah. I mean, he was unbelievably into that whole... And I think his favourite band was the Cramps, or at least we used to quote Cramps lyrics at each other, and he was just...
I think he used to play with them at one time, didn't he?
The band? I don't think he would have. He was in a band. He was in a number of bands up there in Brisbane, but yeah.
Well, I thought I saw something about the Cramps in one of the obits I read about him, but maybe it was just referring to the fact that he was a fan.
Yeah, he was a big fan, and he was a fan of all that kind of music. I mean, he was the anti-Doof Doof gay guy, I guess, you know.
Okay. Well, we're just remembering Ian Clichere, the editor of Queensland Pride magazine, who sadly died suddenly, we think, on Friday last week. His funeral is on Wednesday up in Queensland, and Andrew Shaw and Richard Watts from Evolution will be going up there to hopefully have a good time at the wake as well. Mm. I think Ian would probably like that. Mm. You're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. If you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
And I would like to have the chance to grow old disgracefully, which just by coincidence happens to be the topic brewing beneath Kay Sarah's bonnet this week.
Yes, thank you, Doug. It's your worst nightmare. You wake up one morning, you look in the mirror and you're old. Not just mature, but positively ancient. Grey hair, lines, wrinkles, and you're dressed like one of your grandparents. Beige cardi for the blokes and floral penny for the gals. Arthritic and stooping and vague, you use eyeglasses to read and aid to hear, and you've begun to notice an uncontrollable shake in your right hand. Bugger. Old age. Worse still, films like Driving Miss Daisy and Grumpy Old Men are beginning to make sense. Okay, you caught me out. No queen in her right mind is going to sit down to reruns of Grumpy Old Men. Driving Miss Daisy, perhaps, but Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon fighting over Anne Margaret in the snow? Oh, please. Otherwise, it's a fair enough assessment of the challenges of senior years, and you better get used to it. Hundreds, no, millions of folk, gay, lesbian and otherwise, are growing old as we speak. And no amount of Botox and tanning lotion is going to alter that fact. Although, looking around at TV and film, you'd be forgiven for thinking otherwise. Even in our own magazines and venues. Hello, Andrew. Hello, Andy. And dare I say, pretty much every other chunk of the visible gay world, you'd think youth is all there is. Well, that should come as a surprise to just a few very active social groups right here in Melbourne. The Boilers are a case in point. This year they celebrate their 50th. Making them very possibly the oldest gay social group in Australia. What an achievement. The demographic of the group hovers around the 65-plus range, and while they may be a tad slower getting from A to B, there is absolutely nothing wrong with their capacity to kick up the heels. Just recently I was invited to a Boilers gathering in South Melbourne, and let me tell you, the conversation, along with the bubbly, flowed thick and fast. And just quietly,
but was still a twinkle in the eye of more than a few of these seasoned gents. Surprised? Don't be. As a mature fellow once confessed recently, it's not like they cut off the water supply when you reach a certain age. It's just that the flow is less constant and sometimes the tap drips. One queen in particular at the boilers gathering caught my eye. Translucent skin, finely plucked brows. She was none other than Lottie, the famous Melbourne drag identity. If you were around in the 60s, you'd have enjoyed Lottie's company. By all accounts, she was quite the social butterfly. The time of day for anyone who dared approach Lottie embodied the spirit of the era. Back then, the pubs closed up shop at 6 p.m, leaving punters high and dry. You made your own fun, and over the course of a busy Saturday night, it wasn't unusual to hop around from one house party to another. A bottle of booze was all you needed to get into a camp home. I can't help but think that for all the fabulous freedom the modern gay scene has delivered, we're missing that one thing. A sense of familiarity and connection with each other, of partying no matter what and making our own fun despite crippling prejudice. But I digress. If commentators are to be believed, the ageing of the population heralds in grey as the dominant social force. And whether we like it or not, that is going to encompass the GLBTI community. There are already plans afoot for a gay-friendly retirement village out of town. Imagine that, growing old around like-minded folk. Which reminds me, I must send through my audition tape to the proprietors of said retirement village. Where there are mature puffs and dykes, there's bound to be a need for sensible entertainment. And I do a killer impression of Dusty. And if you're thinking Dusty who, you're drowning in that mythical fountain of eternal youth, and I can simply do nothing for you. I'm Kay Serrar, and like the boilers, I ain't about to take getting old lying down. What am I saying? Horizontal is positively my favourite position.
Thanks, Kay. Now, before we go, we've got a few messages here I just want to read. Bobby says, no sympathy whatever for those gays complaining about the legal changes. Seems to me bitchy old queens can't handle the fact that now couples actually have to support one another. Mary says, if Centrelink is willing to sign up a documenting us as legally equal in all manners, I would welcome the change. And on a completely different topic, John's SMS is to say, are you guys aware that the new High Court judge is an out lesbian, as mentioned by Rodney Croom on his blog, and why isn't this mentioned in the gay press? Well, actually, you did sort of mention it indirectly in the Star, didn't you, by saying that she was one of the original 69ers or whatever.
Yeah, she was involved in defending the early Mardi Gras people that were taken by police. So I'm pretty sure Sydney's mentioned it.
Yeah, and she was actually one of the marchers as well. Yes, that was kind of slipped in sideways.
Sometimes,
but reading between the lines, it is fairly clear that, yes, she's one of the girls. She just wasn't particularly out about
it. Forget about that. What's a politic like?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really matter, does it?
No, not at all. But it's nice to see that they're maintaining the principle of at least one rainbow person on the High Court now that Michael Kirby's gone.
Yeah.
The article in the paper today simply mentioned her living with her partner, quote, a female barrister, unquote. So keeping it in the family.
Do you think they'll be using Centrelink?
Not with their salaries.
Darling, they're planning to buy Centrelink.
I think it's really quite remarkable that we've come so far. I mean, this business about equality, okay, it's going to hurt some people, and we're trying, I think a lot of people are trying to prevent as much of that hurt as possible, but when we can openly sit here and joke about a High Court judge being a lesbian, I think we've come quite a long way from the 1960s you were talking about, Kay.
Yes. Well, I'm actually, for various projects, I'm talking to a lot of, I don't like to call them older folk, I call them sensible folk, and truly I have the best conversations, and these people are invisible. It's just like arriving on another planet. You see these guys, you know, these 84, 85-year-old guys, and you think, why haven't I seen you? Why haven't I read your story, or why haven't I spoken to you out at events? And it's just, I guess, it's the sort of the tyranny of the era that they tend not to sort of go out and mix and match. But there's a wealth of experience there.
Yeah, and it's sad that we're very bad at passing on our knowledge and experience.
I think it's partly our fault in the gay press too. I don't think we seek it out. And I've had people say to me, well, I look in those pages and I don't see me.
Mm. Well, they will. There's a project for the two of you.
Oops, I shouldn't have.
Perhaps you should get together with Kay and well, with me as well, and we'll write a book about gay seniors. How about it? Okay. Well, that's it for another week. My guests tonight were Andy Noonan, Andrew Shaw, Corey Ellen, Caroline Simons, Dan Clark from Adelaide Feast, and, of course, Kay Serrar. The show is produced by Bianca Johnston. Technical production is by Michael. I'm Doug Pollard, and as long as he doesn't break the appointment, I'll be back next week with a special edition of the Rainbow Report with Attorney General Robert McClelland.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.